My talk today is about the medical care for post-sexual assault for U.S. service women. Before I go on, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Dr. Brenda Booth, who is at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock, Jim Torner, he's with the University of Iowa College of Public Health, and Dr. Ann Sadler, who is the PI on both of these grants and is located at the Iowa City VA. The results that I'm presenting today come from two sister studies, which were funded by the Department of Defense, DOD, and the VA Health Services Research area. The project goals included understanding barriers to healthcare in relationship to service women's deployment, and in this case, specific to sexual assault occurring during military service. So what we wanted to do was to determine whether service women received post-assault medical care, and if so, what care was received, and if they didn't, why they chose not to get care or didn't get care. This was a retrospective cross-sectional survey. Our sample was composed of both active duty and veteran service women, and we were able to get their contact information from the Defense Manpower Data Center, which is DMDC. We used computer-assisted telephone interviews, or CADIs, to collect our data. Our survey topics included demographics, women's military characteristics, sexual assault histories. Our sample response rate was 57%. The population that we sampled was a Midwestern population, service women who had come from Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri. In this sample, we had approximately 80% that were still serving at the time of their interview. About 20% had veteran status. As I said, these were sister studies, so we had 50% that were active component, or oftentimes we refer to them as regular military, and then 50% that were reserve and National Guard. We stratified our sample by rank and by deployment within the enlisted rank. So approximately 50% of our sample had been deployed at least once to Iraq and or Afghanistan. Approximately a quarter had never been deployed, and another quarter had been deployed but never to Iraq or Afghanistan. The officers were not stratified by deployment history, but it turned out that they fell out with similar percentages. We oversampled officers, so that's why we have 29% in our sample of officers versus 71% enlisted. The definition of sexual assault that we used was sexual assault is where someone makes you have sex against your will by using force or threatening to harm you or someone close to you. Our definition of sexual assault included both attempted and completed. So attempted is where penetration did not occur, whereas completed, often referred to as rape, was where penetration did occur. The definition that we're using in this study is specific to sexual assault occurring while in military. Okay. So in our sample, we had 82% that had never experienced a sexual assault while serving. We only had two women out of the 1,339 that refused to answer our question about whether or not they had ever been sexually assaulted. One of the things I want to point out is that I've got RNG during AC service 3% and not included in the results that I'm showing. So with these two studies, we ask the active component about sexual assault occurring during their active component service. Well, a lot of the RNG service women may have had active component service prior to going into the RNG. Unfortunately, in this, we did not ask about their medical care post-sexual assault for RNG service women whose sexual assaults occurred during their active component service. We had 207 women that we asked about their post-assault medical care. 6% of those were reservists, National Guard, 9% active component. So this is just kicks off where we can see that only 16% of the women that said they experienced sexual assault during military service received acute post sexual assault medical care. So one of the questions we ask is, as a direct result of your sexual assault, did you incur a physical injury? So the majority, 73%, said no, no physical injury. And then we asked if they received care. So of those that had no physical injury, 11% said that they did seek post-sexual assault medical care. Among those that said, yes, I had a physical injury, only 29% of those sought post-sexual assault medical care. I'm sorry. It is if they received it. It's almost exactly the same numbers as whether they saw it or whether they received. So, but further on in the study, it'll be what they actually received. So I apologize if I go back and forth. So we asked them various reasons among those that had never sought care why they didn't. So we had an N of 174 that had never sought care. These are not mutually exclusive. They could have answered yes to more than one of our questions. So the majority said they didn't get care because they didn't think it was needed. So 86% said it wasn't needed. Now, what I've also done here is broken it down between those that had an attempted versus a completed sexual assault. So 92% of those with an attempted said it wasn't needed. And what's interesting is 81% of those with a completed sexual assault said it was not needed. Then other reasons they didn't get care was that they were too embarrassed. They were afraid of their loss of confidentiality, of being blamed, and the negative impact that it could have on their career. And you can see that for those that experienced a completed sexual assault, that these were very common concerns. After we asked a series of potential reasons, we also asked what was the participant's most important reason for not getting care. Well, the most important or primary reason was that they didn't think care was needed. Okay. There was also a group that were too embarrassed. But then the remainder of the reasons seemed to all have to do with consequences, post-sexual assault consequences. So again, that loss of confidentiality, being blamed, negatively impacting their career. One of the things that came to the fore in this question is that fear of perpetrator reprisal. So you can see at the bottom, the last row, it says perpetrator reprisal, and for those that had experienced a completed sexual assault, 13% said that was their most important reason for not getting care. So I just wanted to point out that people, our service women, were no more likely to say that they had gotten post-assault care if they had experienced a single or multiple sexual assaults. So what we asked is if they had ever. So there was no difference in the number. What was noteworthy is that women that served in the active component were more likely to say, I swear I'm not reading on this at all, were more likely to say that they got care. So we ask about the type of care that they received. So you can see I've got it broken down. There are only 33 women that responded that they had gotten any type of care, and I've broken it down between attempted and completed. So the most common was a pregnancy test or screening for sexually transmitted infections. But you can see none of these are close to, 99%. I was gonna. So five of the women had none of these things. 20 of them had both the pregnancy test or morning after pill and the STI screenings. We also asked where they received their care. And these are not mutually exclusive. For those that experienced an attempted sexual assault, they were most likely to respond that they had gotten their care at a military base. And you can see that my numbers are very small. So four women at a military base versus one at a civilian care provider. However, you can see with the women that experienced the completed, they were much more likely to go outside to get their care from a civilian care provider, which makes sense when we looked at their concerns about getting care in the first place. In summary, the service women reported significant barriers to acute post-SIAM sexual assault medical care, resulting in just a small number seeking necessary treatment. Those service women who did seek acute post-SIAM care reported differences in post-assault care practices. As few service women believed post-assault care was needed, educational interventions about immediate and long-term health impacts on SIAM are indicated. Barriers to post-sexual assault care are identifiable, and interventions to address these and facilitate immediate post-sexual assault care are essential. As most service women experience sexual assault have not received acute post-SA care, healthcare providers must be aware that routine assessment for sexual assault is indicated and that sensitive practices are necessary. And research investigating differences in acute post-assault care between the active component and the reserve National Guard are indicated. And I want to add that this presentation is not meant to deny the importance of mental health issues. Half of those who got post-sexual assault medical care, the provider only, so of the small number, the 33 women that got medical care, half of those, the provider offered to refer them to counseling to address their sexual assault. Thank you.